people to be patient. Pablo Neruda. It's so difficult to wait, and yet nothing short of patience can give us access to the nature of wholeness. In part, this is because the mystery of life in its totality is incomprehensible, and what can be understood often speaks in a language so slow that we seldom stick around long enough to hear it. As the great Chilean poet Pablo Neruda confirms, patience is a gift that waits beneath our very human agitation. Yet only through the incredibly difficult effort of staying present will life's forces reveal to us their powers of oneness. I recently went to the ocean and listened much of the night to the surf, and the next morning I was surprised to see that the tide had receded to reveal a cliff that had been submerged. I was now able to walk on what revealed itself, out into the sea. And the water rising about me, spraying and slapping what normally can't be seen, made me realize it's the same with our pain. For only when we can outwait the dark will the sharpness of experience recede like a tide to reveal what has survived beneath it all. Often what seems tragic, if looked at long enough, reveals itself as part of a larger transformation. I also remember coming on a clearing in the woods, so densely overgrown that it felt depressing, for nothing seemed capable of getting through. Something in my own makeup resembled this, and made me return there several times. But it was finally in winter, without its leaves, that this same clearing undressed itself as a magnificent bed of light that happened to be on the crest of a beautiful hill. It humbled me to realize that winter can be freeing too, and that I'm often overgrown with memories and reasons and twigs of mind that block me from the light. So often, in our agitation and impatience, we hurry off, annoyed and troubled, in search of love or peace, never imagining where we first looked is now letting light through or sprouting its truth. It takes months for a crab apple to shake the crab and find the apple, even longer for joy to split its human bark. For your meditation, breathe deeply and center yourself in the dense woods of your heart. Go to the clearing from which you understand yourself. Sit beneath the many memories and reasons and feelings that have grown like leaves in your heart. Feel how the record of what you've lived through keeps the light from getting through. Without analyzing or becoming nostalgic, without thinking at all, breathe deeply and let your breath release a light-blocking leaf of heart. Let your deep-centered breathing be a soft wind that starts to strip your heart free. October 23rd. The Wisdom to Survive. My mom said she learned how to swim. Someone took her out in the lake and threw her off the boat. That's how she learned how to swim. I said, "Mom, they weren't trying to teach you how to swim." Paula Poundstone. Reframing what happens to us can be a healthy way to survive terrible things, or it can become a veil of denial that keeps us from moving on. Often we simply have to trust that we will see the truth of things when we're strong enough and ready. Yet the danger in not seeing things as they are, or were, is that we can start to believe that in order to learn something, we need someone to throw us off the boat or out of the relationship. If we can't see the difference between the cruelty or hardship we experience and the wisdom waiting in our reflex to survive, we can find ourselves needing crisis and pain in order to learn. While much learning comes from crisis and pain, not all of it needs to. We don't need something to go through in order to change. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind one change you're afraid to make in your life. Breathe deeply and ask yourself, Are you waiting for someone to push you off the boat? Breathe gently, and don't worry now about what to do or how. Simply exhale and feel the wisdom to survive and grow waiting inside you. October 24th. The way things are. Be content with what you have. Rejoice in the way things are. When you realize there's nothing lacking, the whole world belongs to you. Lao Tzu. Beyond what we need to survive, to better ourselves has come to mean having as much as one can store, and as such has turned into an addiction in our modern world. Such a want to have things comes from a sense of scarcity, an anxiety that something is missing, which owning will somehow soothe. But to better ourselves inwardly is another matter. The closer to heart we take this, the more we find ourselves trying to inhabit what we have carried since the beginning. This want comes from a sense of abundance, a yearning to unlock the mystery of what's already there. The difference became stark for me while struggling with cancer. For while I prayed for things to be better, my prayers were answered when I woke one morning content to be who I am, no matter what was happening. Though things were not as I wanted, there was truly nothing lacking, and I vowed as the nurses started their morning rounds that I would trade places with no one, spirits with all. For your meditation, center yourself and feel the reality of your life this morning. Let your breath take you, for the moment, beneath your dreams of betterment. As you exhale, feel the soreness around all you want. As you inhale, feel the mystery at center where nothing is lacking. October 25th. To the core. No one lands where they aim, not even God. We're so quick to condemn this or exile that, to ostracize the breaker of promises, when the truth is that nothing in nature arrives as imagined. In fact, because the space between what we intend and what we do is often great, we keep beginning. Because the gap between what we feel and what we say is often surprising, we keep trying. Because the field between what we experience and what we understand is so vast, we keep growing. This is pointedly different from deliberately living contrary to what we believe and say. That's deceit and hypocrisy. But most of the time, we humble creatures simply miss the mark. We aim, mean well, and fall short, or wide, or overreach what we set out to do. I've come to believe that this is all part of the friction of the inner life of things becoming outer. Just as we learn in grade school about refraction, about how a stick placed in water will not stay where we put it, what we feel and think and aim for shifts once entering the world, never quite where we imagine it. It is, despite our frustration, what makes life interesting and love hard. Each of us gets the chance, repeatedly, to announce with all the certainty we can muster our own version of the world is flat, only to live into the humility of what has always been true. When I think of the beliefs I have declared over my lifetime and how they were broken like trees in a storm, or the vows I swore to keep at all cost only to deny knowing God like Peter, or the pride with which I would never kneel, only to be brought to my knees by pain. When I accept the fragile way that the human journey unfolds, these become less mistakes and more the way that nature works. We grow into truth, one self at a time, questioning, declaring, aiming, missing, then questioning again. As fruits are all encased until ripe, Light comes full term in the dark, and truth ripens in the heart. The only way to know the truth is to live through its many casings. For your meditation, center yourself and meditate on the spirit within you that has survived all the different selves you've been. Breathe deeply and focus on one truth you swore by that you now know is no longer true. Breathe slowly, taking the time to shed with each breath any embarrassment, shame, or sense of failure that might arise from seeing this. With humility, love the fruit that is you that has ripened within these different casings. October 26th. The effort to listen. What's so important that we have time to read all the books on love and relationships, but we don't have time to listen to the heart of our lover? Molly Voss. We all suffer at times from the effort to study something instead of living it, or from the effort to fix or advise rather than listen and hold. But as the theologian Paul Tillich puts it, the first duty of love is to listen. When I think of the times I've truly listened in my life, to the sea's endless lapping, to the sighs of my grandmother when she thought no one was near, to the pains of others that I have caused, it's receiving these simple truths that has made me a better man. So often when we refuse to listen, we become obsessed with remaking the world in our own image, rather than opening the spirit within us to the spirit of what is. At the deepest level, ours is not to make ourselves heard, but to be still enough to hear. As the Native American elder Saka Edge Henderson says, to truly listen is to risk being changed forever. For your meditation, during your day, take 5 minutes and stop making, stop doing, stop thinking, and just listen. October 27th. The World Body. Earth Mother, you who are called by a thousand names, may all remember we are cells in your body and dance together. Starhawk. If you've ever flown, you know that from just below the clouds, the roads are like arteries and the cars like cells. From above the traffic, it becomes clear that though we all have places to go, we just keep circulating through the streets. We race and pause and stop and start, never sure if the road we're turning onto will be congested or barren and free. For example, every other day, I flip my blinker and drive down Washington Avenue. Some days, there isn't a car and the lights are all green. Other days, I have to wait and I get irritated. But whether I'm early or late by my time, the dilation and constriction of events is something beyond my control. In truth, like little cells, we race up and down pathways, collecting and dispersing, feeling crowded then lonely, and somehow just doing so keeps the world body healthy. Like blood through a body, we are life pumping through the streets. Even waiting at a light, we are helping life go on. For your meditation, the next time you find yourself in a crowd, slow down and feel life circulating about you. For the moment, let go of where you're going and simply breathe. Breathe out your concerns and feel yourself as a healthy cell whose simple movement is cleansing the world body. October 28th. Buddha and Agyalamala. I have stopped, you have not. Buddha. There's a story of how, just before he was hung, Agyalamala, the murderer, became an arahant, a worthy one, because of his encounter with Buddha. Agyalamala had seemingly been so driven from his own life that he was taking the lives of others. Perhaps it was timing, the readiness of a man about to die, confronted with the unwavering presence of an authentic spirit. No one will ever know, but it's said that the two stood before each other for a very long time, and when the silence seemed to part some veil from Agyalamala's eyes, Buddha said to him, "I have stopped. You have not stopped." This was followed by an equally telling silence, after which the fortress of cruelty that Agyalamala had built around his heart crumbled. It's said that, though Agyalamala was hung with a rope made from the finger bones of his victims, in the moments between Buddha's words and his own last breath, Agyalamala truly lived. Of course, such a story is a penetrating riddle. What had this man not stopped that enabled him to murder? And what had Buddha stopped that enabled him to be enlightened? Though we'll never know, we can suggest that the thing not stopped might be any form of running from the risk and pain of being alive, such as denial, hiding, or projection. For any form of running from the truth of ourselves can lead to such a numb existence that one can become violent in order to feel. If we don't stop running, we can murder ourselves again and again by taking the lives of others, either physically through violence, or sexually through conquest, or emotionally through dominance and control, or professionally through power. Ultimately, however you enter this riddle, we are both Buddha and Agyalamala, and we repeatedly need to have this conversation with ourselves in order to stay compassionate and real. For your meditation, center yourself, and with your in-breath, let the Buddha in you say, "I have stopped." Breathe deeply, and with your out-breath, let the Agyalamala in you say, "I have not stopped." Inhale slowly, and even if you're not sure how, enter your day with a commitment to stop running from the truth of your life. October 29th. Our ability to try. If you try to teach before you learn or leave before you stay, you will lose your ability to try. There are so many ways we can divorce ourselves from our own experience. I can remember as a young man fearing the pain of being hurt by love, I became endlessly involved in advising others in their struggles with love. I can remember when fearing the sadness and pain of conflict with dear ones, leaving notes rather than facing them in person, trying to leap over the need to go through the real stuff face to face. I can remember when facing the next horrific chemo treatment, trying to anticipate and prepare endlessly for every possible instant of pain and fear, only to discover that no amount of preparation can keep me from my experience. Each of these separations, teaching before learning, leaving before staying, anticipating rather than entering, each left me drained of my deepest resource, the energy of my life force. Removing myself even from pain only left me pale and unable to continue. When needle or hand or rain or sun hits the skin, the only thing to do is meet its exact touch from the inside. For this moment of inner meeting outer releases an electricity of spirit that gifts us with a tenderness for being awake. For your meditation, sit with a trusted loved one, and after centering yourselves, take turns. Let your loved one slowly place their palm on your heart. As their hand reaches and lands on your heart, Practice meeting its touch with the energy of your inwardness. October 30th. The Art of Facing Things. What people have forgotten is what every salmon knows. Robert Clark. Salmon have much to teach us about the art of facing things. In swimming up waterfalls, these remarkable creatures seem to defy gravity. It's an amazing thing to behold. A closer look reveals a wisdom for all beings who want to thrive. What the salmon somehow know is how to turn their underside from center to tail into the powerful current coming at them, which hits them squarely, and the impact then launches them out and further up the waterfall, to which their reaction is, again, to turn their underside back into the powerful current that, of course, again hits them squarely, and this successive impact launches them further out and up the waterfall. Their leaning into what they face bounces them further and further along their unlikely journey. From a distance, it seems magical, as if these mighty fish are flying, conquering their element. In actuality, they are deeply at one with their element, vibrantly and thoroughly engaged in a compelling dance of turning toward and being hit squarely that moves them through water and air to the very source of their nature. In terms useful to the life of the spirit, the salmon are constantly faithful in exposing their underside to the current coming at them. Mysteriously, it's the physics of this courage that enables them to move through life as they know it so directly. We can learn from this very active paradox, for we too must be as faithful to living in the open if we are to stay real in the face of our daily experience. In order not to be swept away by what the days bring, we too must find a way to lean into the forces that hit us so squarely. The salmon offer us a way to face truth without shutting down. They show us how leaning into our experience, though we don't like the hit, moves us on. Time and again, though we'd rather turn away, it's the impact of being revealed through our willingness to be vulnerable that enables us to experience both mystery and grace. For your meditation, sit quietly and meditate on the last time you opened yourself to the life coming at you. In recalling this, try to focus on three things: the way that opening yourself caused you to unfold, the way that being hit squarely changed your life position, and where leaping like a salmon landed you. Breathe steadily and invite the lessons of opening, being changed, and landing into your heart. Breathe slowly and realize that you are in this process now. Relax and turn the belly of your heart toward the day. October 31st. Only while loving. If you had a sad childhood, so what? You can dance with only one leg and see the snowflake falling with only one eye. Robert Bly. I flew all the way to South Africa, carrying all my troubles with me like oversized bags that no one could check. And there in the sun that lit up Cape Town, I saw a boy on Green Street dancing on crutches. I put my bags of trouble down to watch. When he was dancing, the crutches were light as drumsticks bouncing off the street. When he stopped, they became crutches again. Only while dancing, or while watching the dancer, did this make sense. Now that I'm back, I approach things differently. For only while telling the truth does the truth lighten us. When we stop, it turns massive. I left some of my bags on that corner of Green Street, somewhere below the equator. Now I carry less and try to dance on my crutches. for only while loving do the pains of feeling lighten. For your meditation, bring to mind a scar that you carry. Feel the legitimacy of its weight. Now try to see if you carry a crutch to support the weight of your scar. If you do, loosen your grip. Breathe deeply and play with your crutch. Breathe fully, and for the moment, put it down. November 1st. The next moment of love. To allow oneself to be carried away by a multitude of conflicting concerns, to surrender to too many demands, to commit oneself to too many projects, to want to help everyone in everything, is to succumb to violence. The frenzy of the activist neutralizes his or her work for peace. Thomas Merton. Merton wisely challenges us not just to slow down, but at the heart of it to accept our limitations. We are at best filled with the divine, but we have only two hands and one heart. In a deep and subtle way, the want to do it all is a want to be it all. And though it comes from a desire to do good, it often becomes frenzied because our egos seize our goodness as a way to be revered. I have done this many times, not wanting to say no, not wanting to miss an opportunity, not wanting to be seen as less than totally compassionate. But wherever I can't bring my entire being, I'm not there. It's like offering to bring too many cups of coffee through a crowd. I always spill something hot on some innocent along the way. Helen Luke speaks to all this when she talks of the trap of good works. She refers to those who take refuge from themselves in an unreflective pursuit of good, pouring all their energy into the redemption of society and other people, while blind to their own personal darkness. It seems the old adage is a place to start. Do one thing and do it well. Though I would offer it as, do one thing at a time and do it entirely, and it will lead you to the next moment of love. For your meditation, center yourself and think of the many kindnesses that you feel called to do. As you breathe, let your heart glow around one. Without thinking, pray for the others. But devote yourself today to the one. November 2nd. The Hunt for Truth. I take a wolf's rib and whittle it sharp at both ends, and freeze it in blubber and place it out on the fairway of the bears. And when it has vanished, I move out on the bear tracks, roaming in circles for days. Galway Kinnell. The way that Eskimo hunt bear for food is powerfully captured in Galway Kinnell's poem, The Bear. Yet just as Eskimo hunt food for survival, we often find ourselves searching for an inner food known as truth. For the authenticity of living is not just an interesting idea or an eloquent feeling. Authenticity, the experience of truth, is our richest food. Without it, we will freeze to death. Two lessons happen to Kinnell's Eskimo that are difficult to take in. On the third day out, the hunter is starving as much as the hunted, and at nightfall, he stoops as he knew he would to gnash down a bear turd sopped in blood. What this tells us is that no matter what we say we will or will not do, no matter the imperious standards by which we judge ourselves and the world, we humbly can't know what we will do when starving for truth. And rightly so, for life on earth often brings us to our knees so that something can take root. When dying of cancer, I, a proud Jew who vowed never to kneel, found myself on my knees before a Catholic healer who laid hands on the tumor on my brain. While feeding on truth can disrupt the ways we like to see ourselves, it can also deeply affirm that we as human beings are resilient beyond anything we can imagine. A second imperative occurs when the Eskimo, 7 days out, is half frozen as the bear finally dies, and he is forced to enter the gutted cavity of the bear to survive the cold. For those of us who search for truth in cold modern streets, we are told here that arriving at the truth is not enough. We need to put it on, to inhabit it, to actually enter and wear the truth. So where do we begin? Well, the Eskimo also teach us how to hunt for truth in the way they fashion their bait, not by intellectual debate or esoteric study, but by risking something of ourselves, by placing something troublesome and sweet in the open, by offering something essential from our hunger and coating it with our vulnerability. We call the greater truth into the open with the smaller. Humbly and unavoidably, the need for truth will lead us into the unexpected living of our lives beyond all images of perfection. For your meditation, is there something you have done that you vowed you would never do? Do you consider this to be a triumph or a failure? What prompted you to act this way? Was it courage, necessity, or was it a mistake? How has your life changed for this unexpected experience? November 3rd. In the care of something unseen. Genius is a crisis that joins the buried self for certain moments to our daily mind. William Butler Yeats. We've been trained to think of genius as an unusual brilliance of mind, an ability to retain or calculate or conceptualize uncanny amounts of information. But the original sense of genius means attendant spirit, being in the care of something unseen but near. It's really another definition of wholeness or God, another way of acknowledging the Tao, the unseeable stream we all swim in. What Yeats offers us is an insight into life on earth. The great Irish poet suggests that crisis is an unexpected jarring of our ways that brings us into contact with our attendant spirit. I'm reminded that the Chinese ideogram for danger also means opportunity. This is not to suggest that we seek out danger, but that we look for the openings, when broken by experience, by which we can find our connection to the unseeable stream we often forget we are a part of. Perhaps the purpose in crisis, if there is one, is not to break us as much as to break us open. For your meditation, sit quietly and feel the unseeable stream you are a part of. Breathe slowly and meditate on your genius, your attendant spirit. Breathe softly and expose whatever crisis you are in to your attendant spirit. If you can, move through your day feeling both your crisis and your depth of genius. Let them join. November 4th. Beholding others. Once for the thing, just once, no more. And we too just once, and never again. But to have been this once completely, even if only once, to have been at one with the earth, seems beyond undoing. Rainer Maria Rilke. I was visiting a friend who asked me, "How do you prepare for meeting people you respect? How do you know what to ask or say?" I'd never thought about it, but realized with his asking that ever since my cancer experience, I enter every meeting with another being saying to myself, if I only have this time on earth with this person, if I may never see them again, what is it I want or need to ask, to know? What is it I want or need to say? I find I come upon others now as if I have just crossed a desert and each of them is an oasis. The truth is that each living spirit we encounter is a depth to gently swim in, a miracle that can quench our thirst. Honoring others in this way has opened me to wisdoms that would otherwise run silent beneath my time on earth. For your meditation, sit with a trusted loved one or friend, and with your eyes closed, meditate on just how rare it is to be alive at the same time. When you are fully feeling this awareness, open your eyes and behold each other. Breathe slowly, and if you have only this time together, let the one question you would ask rise within you. Behold each other and ask. November 5th. Plans and planning. Plans are useless, but planning is invaluable. Winston Churchill. We easily confuse plans with planning, dreams with dreaming, and love with loving. The wisdom waiting within what Churchill says is that we live like hungry fishermen, sowing and casting our nets, though we never really know what they will catch, never really know what will feed us until it is brought aboard. So as Buddhists say, to be a good fisherman, you must detach yourself from the dream of the fish. This makes whatever is caught or found a treasure. When I look at all the books I've written, I must confess that every one has been discovered along the way to other plans. What I envision when I begin is never what is actually written. The same can be said for my career path. For me, the most meaningful job experiences have been completely unforeseen, the result of seizing heartfelt opportunities that appeared along the way to other dreams. I must also confess that though I've imagined love and lovers often, each person I've been blessed to love has come to life beyond all imagining. Certainly there are times we need to anticipate what is coming, and times we need to be spontaneous. But too much is made of choosing either way. Plans are kindling to every fire, and no two fires are the same. We just need their heat and light. For your meditation, center yourself and think of your current plans for happiness. As you breathe, lay your plans before your heart like sticks of kindling. Not knowing what fire they will light in you, enter your day looking for the spark. November 6th. When we squint. And when we squint, we think we see like a tiger, while the truth, like the sun, spills everywhere but through our slits. We have all heard the gritty advice that when things get tough, we need to dig in. This often translates to an aggressive, alert stance. We hone our focus and thinking, readying ourselves for anything. Unfortunately, when we steel ourselves for battle, our focus narrows and we can cut out as much of what we need as what we fear. I'm not suggesting that we stumble through life without thought or focus. Rather, I'm offering a deeper sense of what it means to be alert. There's a telling difference between the sharp line of a laser ray and the wash of sunlight over a field, between the sharpness of a mind in crisis and the wash and warmth of an open heart. When we need it most, it is nearly impossible to see ourselves with compassion from the slit of a narrowed mind all tensed for battle. A few months after the tumor vanished from my head, I bumped into a very bright friend in a restaurant who was tenacious in pursuing what I'd done to defeat the tumor. I kept telling her of the enormous surrender that had overcome my life, and that I didn't really know how to account for the miracle. She squinted terribly, as if blocking out the glare of the mystery, and insisted that I was evidence of what mind could do over matter. As she squinted, I could feel her heart close. It was very sad. We've had little to say to each other ever since. I've also found myself from time to time unable to stay in the feeling of a moment because my alertness in crisis, like a periscope shooting up, pulls me out of my heart. And the next thing I know, I'm lost in the analysis of problem-solving, of calibrating advantages and liabilities. Like my friend, when I squint, insisting solely on my will to power me in the world, I close myself to the mystery, and I notice I become sad, having little to say to myself. This has taught me that attention to detail can be mistaken for the act of caring. The truth is that being alert often requires us to widen our focus and to see with what the Sufis call the heart's eye. For though surprise and crisis can make us squint like a tiger and show our claws, it's the effort to enlarge and stay open that helps us the most. For your meditation, before a mirror, with your eyes closed, meditate on a confusion or problem that is troubling you. Allow yourself to think about its circumstances and possible solutions. Now look at yourself in the mirror and note the tension in your face and how it affects your eyes. Staying before the mirror, again, meditate with your eyes closed and try to relax your analysis. Try to look at the confusion or problem with your heart's eye without trying to solve it. Now look at yourself in the mirror and note if and how your face and eyes have changed. Discuss the difference with a trusted loved one. November 7th. The waters within us. Spirit like water is a source of life. We cannot live dry. The more we're worn by experience, the more of an inlet we become, and the more the waters of life wash out of us. This is why tears come more easily the longer we are here. Perhaps wisdom is nothing more than the unsayable waters rising within us to swell around the eye, the way that oceans soften land, evidence of that inevitable tide that takes a lifetime to rise. We are so afraid of the waters within us that we often tense as soon as we see tears, asking, "What's wrong?" when perhaps we need to ask those at sea, "What do you see?" For your meditation, sit quietly and recall the last time you cried. Breathe slowly and revisit the feeling of release. Breathe into that release and look beneath what caused you to cry. Breathe deeply and feel for the unsayable wisdom rising to cover you. November 8th. We are all made delicate. We are all made delicate or we perish. Isn't this the cloth our griefs sew? The hard things break, the soft things bend, the stubborn ones batter themselves against all that is immovable, the flexible adapt to what is before them, Of course, we are all hard and soft, stubborn and flexible, and so we all break until we learn to bend and are battered until we accept what is before us. This brings to mind the Sumerian tale of Gilgamesh, the stubborn, hard king who sought to ask the Immortal One the secret of life. He was told that there would be stones on his path to guide him. But in his urgency and pride, Gilgamesh was annoyed to find his path blocked, and so he smashed the very stones that would help him. In his blindness of heart, he broke everything he needed to discover his way. With the same confusion, we too break what we need, push away those we love, and isolate ourselves when we need to be held most. There have been many times in my life when I have been too proud to ask for help or too afraid to ask to be held, and in the frenzy of my own isolation, like Gilgamesh, I have smashed the window I was trying to open, have split the bench I was trying to hammer, have made matters worse by bruising the one I meant to be tender with. The live bough bends, the dead twig snaps. We are humbled to soften from our griefs, or else in brittle time become the next thing grieved. For your meditation, meditate on a situation you are now facing in which you are being hard, stubborn, or resistant. Look at your stubbornness. What are you preserving by being so hard? What might break if you continue being resistant? Now look beneath your stubbornness. What do you fear will happen if you bend to the situation? What might be gained by softening? November 9th. Diving Half Blind. We carry within us the wonders we seek without us. Thomas Brown. The cormorant and common muir are seabirds that dive half blind looking for food. As they go from surface to bottom, air bubbles get caught in their feathers, and this makes them shine. So as they dive, they turn silver. So too we. For don't our bubbles of pain get trapped in our feathers, turning to jewels the closer we get to the current under everything? This is a baptism of true feeling. The deeper we go, the slower the world. The slower the world, the softer our way. So we must keep calling each other into the depths of what we know. For below the surface, we all shine. Diving in, we all turn silver. Given to air alone, the cuts of this world burn. But when we dare to enter what is deep, the bruises we carry soften and glow. In truth, the more we accept our limitations and surrender to the depths below our woundedness, the more the vastness holds us up. There is no way to know this but to dive. For your meditation, center yourself and hold a pain or ache that you carry. Hold it gently before you. As you breathe slowly, surround your pain or ache with a loving kindness that keeps broadening your prayer for all living things. Allow this silent prayer to subside. Now, if you can, feel your pain or ache slightly softened by your love for the world. November 10th. Life on the Edge. You are that which you are seeking. Saint Francis. When I feel lonely, my first thought is that you hold the key to my loneliness. When I feel confused, my first thought is that you or someone neither of us knows is more clear, if I can only find them and get them to speak. When wanting respect, my first thought is often that it's waiting on the other side of some mammoth achievement I must now devote myself to. I try so hard to find what I need or want outside of myself, certain it's waiting for me somewhere just over there. In the end, seeking only brings us to the edge of knowing ourselves. If we never look inward, we tend to become experts at life on the edge, while seldom unlocking what all our seeking means. We can become masters at climbing the mountains of the world instead of breaking trail to the center of our woundedness. We can become masters at driving fast cars through the night instead of moving through the dark corners of our mind. We can become masters at seducing strangers in the name of love, instead of embracing the softer, less perfect aspects of who we are. Seeking in the world has always been a way to mirror to us where we need to work inwardly, but seeking danger outside has always been a way to divert the soul's cry for us to take a genuine risk inside. For your meditation, meditate on something you are seeking. It might be love, power, wealth, or the thrill of jumping out of a plane, or the recognition of being famous. Now imagine that what you seek already lives within you, and as you breathe, hold what you seek before your mind's eye like a door you must enter if you are ever to be whole. Inhale deeply and feel what you seek as a part of your spirit that needs your attention. Exhale deeply, and though you may not know how, give yourself this attention. November 11th. Sustaining Wonder. In one atom are found all the elements of the earth. In one motion of the mind are found all the motions of existence. In one drop of water are found all the secrets of the endless oceans. And in one aspect of you are found all the aspects of life. Khalil Gibran. As humans, we are relentlessly in cycle. The mind builds a shell to protect its turtle spirit. But the shell muffles the spirit, till outgrowing the shell we devise ways to break it. We build the shell, then tear it down. We build it thinner, we tear it down. Yet only between constructions are we thoroughly touched. Only between encasements are we punctured by love. But we are not to be blamed. All of nature is conscripted to such a cycle. Trees grow moss, silver tarnishes, the mind is dulled by the growth of its conceptions, and likewise, a storm removes the moss, a scratch breaks through the tarnish, and crisis reveals the raw surface of the mind. Time builds and erodes, and we are transformed yet the same. Wind gathers sand to a dune, and tide undermines the dune. It's how the early years pack us and the later ones softly flood us without a sound. We have no choice but to withstand the film that constantly builds and to endure the erosion that inevitably follows. Of course, for humans, this dance of film and erosion is not merely physical. It affects our thinking, feeling, seeing, and being. How easily and repeatedly we dull and brighten. How easily we become chronic amnesiacs of spirit, drifting into observation and analysis when we stop participating and experiencing. Then we wake one day, forgetting the feel of life, while incredibly attuned to its silhouette. We can see it so clearly, each perplexity and nuance, yet why can't we feel it? In this way, the mind grows thoughts and words, the way the planet grows trees, so much that we no longer see the heavens, and so we need to chop down what we think and say, and yes, silence is an axe. In truth, Our aliveness depends on our ability to sustain wonder, to lengthen the moments we are truly uncovered, to be still and quiet till all the elements of the earth and all the secrets of the oceans stir the aspects of life waiting within us. For your meditation, the next time you walk outside, let the cold air wash over your closed eyes. Take a deep breath and let the air wash off the film of memory or thought you are struggling with. Feel your blood flush your face and open your eyes freshly. November 12th. Burning the wrapper. From the beginning, the key to renewal has been shedding, the casting off of old skin. The Polynesians say the world began when Taora, their name for the Creator, woke to find himself growing inside a shell. He stretched and broke the shell, and the earth was created. Taora kept growing, though, and after a time found himself inside another shell. Again he stretched and broke the shell, and this time the moon was created. Again Taora kept growing, and again he found himself contained by yet another shell. This time the breaking forth created the stars. In this ancient story, the Polynesians have carried for us the wisdom that we each grow in this life by breaking successive shells, that the peace of God within each of us stretches until there's no room to be, and then the world as we know it must be broken so that we can be born anew. In this way, life becomes a living of who we are until that form of self can no longer hold us, and like Taora in his shell, we must break the forms that contain us in order to birth our way into the next self. This is how we shed our many ways of seeing the world, not that any are false, but that each serves its purpose for a time, until we grow and they no longer serve us. I have lived through many selves, the first of me, so eager to be great, to set things ablaze, shunned everything that was ordinary. I hunted the burn of a champion's hip, and wanted to be a great musician, too, to be famous and extraordinary. But as I grew, the notion of fame left me lonely in the night. Thrones, no matter how pretty, have only room for one. The second of me wanted to be covered by the waves, inhale the stars, and move like a song. Now I wanted to be the great music itself. But to be the great thing was still as lonely as it was magnificent. The third of me gave up on greatness. It was how I let others draw close. I asked more questions, not really interested in answers yet, but more the face below the face about to speak. And then during cancer, there came yet another self, there, bent and distorted in the hospital chrome, as the late sun flooded my pillow. I was dead in the chrome, alive on the pillow, a quiet breath between. Dead, alive at once. And oddly, it did not scare, for I felt the pulse of life in the quiet breath, and the place to which I transcended is here. Almost dying was another shell I had to break. It has led me to realize that each self unfolds just one concentric womb en route to another, each encompassing the last. I would believe in arrival, but for all the arrivals I've broken on the way. For your meditation, breathe slowly with your eyes closed and feel one aspect of your current world that seems confining. Rather than focusing on the people or circumstance involved, try to feel this confinement as the threshold of your next growth. Meditate on how the peace of God within you might stretch and stand more fully, so that being who you are more completely will break the shell of this confinement. Pray to understand that none of this is bad, but simply necessary for the growth of your soul. November 13th. To marry one's soul. Being true to who we are means carrying our spirit like a candle in the center of our darkness. If we are to live without silencing or numbing essential parts of who we are, a vow must be invoked and upheld within oneself. The same commitments we pronounce when embarking on a marriage can be understood internally as a devotion to the care of one's soul. To have and to hold, for better or for worse, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish, till death do us part. This means staying committed to your inner path. This means not separating from yourself when things get tough or confusing. This means accepting and embracing your faults and limitations. It means loving yourself no matter how others see you. It means cherishing the unchangeable radiance that lives within you no matter the cuts and bruises along the way. It means binding your life with a solemn pledge to the truth of your soul. It's interesting that the nautical definition of marry is to join two ropes end to end by interweaving their strands. To marry one's soul suggests that we interweave the life of our spirit with the life of our psychology, the life of our heart with the life of our mind, the life of our faith and truth with the life of our doubt and anxiety. And just as two ropes that are married create a tie that is twice as strong, when we marry our humanness to our spirit, we create a life that is doubly strong in the world. For your meditation, sit quietly and center yourself. Meditate on the fact that being centered includes your confusions and worries, the way a lake is a home for many birds and fish. Breathe gently and let your breath be the water. November 14th. The Cost of Splitting. To birth the baby and to dwell on the baby at the same time engenders madness. Chögyam Trungpa. Try as we will, we can't be both participant and observer at the same time without splitting ourselves. Madness, it seems, is the cost of splitting ourselves in the midst of our experience. To dwell on our next gesture or reply, while a truth is being shared, splits the heart's capacity to feel. To dwell on our bodies while making love splits the capacity of two hearts to bond. To dwell on our reward while performing a kindness splits our authenticity. It is at times the hardest thing a human being must do. When looking in the eye of a dear one, we must look in the very eye of that dear one. When stepping on a dried leaf, we must be there stepping on the very dryness of that hardened leaf. When feeling the face of a stranger's dog, we must, without distraction, feel the dog's panting in the cavern of our heart. For your meditation, center yourself, and as you meditate, see yourself in the room meditating. With each successive breath, practice shedding first the room and then the room of your mind. As you breathe, try not to think or watch anything, just feel for the air coming and going. November 15th. Dying into now. In the end, everyone is aware of this. Nobody keeps any of what he has, and life is only a borrowing of bones. Pablo Neruda.